This is SB Nation Radio.
Great moments are born in great opportunity.
The next generation of sports radio. This is the Tony D Show.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios in New Jersey, here's Tony DeZiri.
All right, thanks for joining us here on SB Nation Radio. I am Tony D, and Monday Night Football. Listen, I'm always in on Monday Night Football. I usually will watch any matchup, even if it's bad. I mean, we've had some times where late in the season, matchups that we thought were going to be really good don't end up being really good, and they try to sell you like, hey, watch the game and call in to win a prize or something crazy like that. But, you know, for the most part, I'm in on Monday Night Football. Last night, though, there was one thing I wanted to see, and there was something I really wasn't interested in seeing at all. I wanted to see Carson Wentz. I wanted to see if what I'm seeing, hearing from the Eagles and their fans and living close to that city and hearing all the excitement about this rookie quarterback was real. But the other thing I didn't want to see is yet another game with Jay Cutler at quarterback for the Bears. I know that. I get that. But I was really interested in seeing kind of what the young, new quarterback was going to do in Philadelphia. And he really didn't disappoint. I mean, look, I said this yesterday about Dak Prescott. We don't necessarily need our young rookie quarterbacks or even guys who kind of were on a bench for a year and getting their first start. We don't need our young QBs to be outstanding. But what we want to see is, do they have poise? Do they look like they belong in this league? Is it far-fetched to believe that they could be successful? If you can get that feeling early on in somebody's career, then you've won half the battle in terms of getting enough attention on your side when you're playing in the National Football League as a young quarterback. Dak Prescott is doing it in Dallas, and now Carson Wentz is not only doing it in Philadelphia, he's doing it exponentially in Philadelphia. They are crazy about him. They love everything about him to make you think that the Eagles wanting to put him in bubble wrap to start the season was a pretty dumb idea. And trading Sam Bradford to the Minnesota Vikings, who gave up a good king's ransom for it, was brilliant. Because the Eagles now have their guy. Now, I don't know what that means, because I still think that a rookie quarterback leading a team, your record is probably going to be a 6-10, 5-11, maybe 7-9. The chances of you making the playoffs are not that good. This league does catch up to you. There's going to be bumps and bruises. There's going to be times where you're going to struggle. Defenses are going to get more film on you. There's going to be a moment where, hey, you know what? Carson Wentz isn't going to be the hot quarterback in the NFL. He's going to look like a rookie. He's going to struggle. The team will lose some games, and it might be a kind of a dark cloud over the year at various points of the season. That doesn't matter, and it doesn't matter now. When you have a rookie quarterback, you're not really looking for success on the field in terms of wins and losses. You want to know, have I attached myself, has my franchise attached themselves to a player that I can see in this league 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years from now? Can I see him being our franchise quarterback? Can I go to bed at night as a fan knowing that that position is in good hands? And that's why I've always said, if you've got a quarterback on your roster and he may struggle with certain things, but he's a veteran, he knows it, you see things about him, he wins some games, he loses some games. If you want to lock him up, I'm okay with it. You want to overpay him, I'm okay with it. In the Eagles' case, they had a quarterback in Sam Bradford. They wanted Sam Bradford to play. The whole intention was he was going to play. There was going to be Chase Daniel backing him up. And Carson Wentz was going to be a long-term project. Not because he didn't have the physical tools to do it. He's a big kid. He's really smart. He's got a good arm. But you know what? You're coming out of North Dakota State. And when you're talking about playing at North Dakota State, and you're talking about some of the games that you're playing and the tough competition that you're playing, it is nothing compared to the NFL. You're not playing anybody that is moving on to the next level in their conference. So everybody looked at Carson Wentz and said, all right, Jared Goff, he's still a project too, but he comes from Cal. And so, but Carson Wentz, it's got to be a long time before I really see some fruit. No. Right away, you're seeing that this kid can play at this level. He made really good decisions throwing the football. The offense is totally geared towards him. He has a great coach that sort of, those two work in tandem. Just so far in these two games, you're seeing a real connection between player and coach. Here's Carson Wentz talking after the game last night in their win against the Chicago Bears on being ready and prepared to play.
Just keep preparing. You know, you keep preparing, try and go 1-0 every week. You know, you block it out. It's all cool. It's all part of it. But at the same time, we got to just go 1-0 each week.
All right. Now, Coach Peterson last night said that he thought things that Carson Wentz did, the things that Carson Wentz, you know, was showing on the sidelines and whatnot, made him think, man, this guy's like a 9 to 10 year veteran. That's all cerebral. That's all up in the brain. That's all Carson Wentz being really, really smart. I think he had, what, a 4.0 average in college. I don't think he ever got a B in any class. He's a very, very smart kid. So he understood coming into the league, well, there's a way I can behave, if you will, to make me understand this better. And that's what's impressing people so far. On the flip side, the Bears and Jay Cutler, yeah, you're getting the same story. Cutler has hurt his thumb. You know, he'll get that looked at. He may need surgery, might be out for a while. But that's the same old Chicago Bears. You're not going to change Jay Cutler. He's not going to be different. He's been in this league a long time. He's going to turn over the ball. They don't have an offensive line. Here's the litany of reasons why the Bears aren't successful. And meanwhile, pair that with the Eagles, who have a team that is built around their quarterback. They don't want their quarterback. They didn't need Carson Wentz to throw for 350 yards. He threw for 190. It's probably the most impressive 190 I think I've ever seen. Now, granted, a lot of it comes with, hey, this is a rookie, let's see what you got, et cetera, et cetera. I'll give you an example. My daughter plays soccer, and she's playing, because of the way the league works here in New Jersey where we live, she has to play two ages up, right? Well, she's not used to playing two ages up. She's 10. So she's playing against 12-year-olds and 11-year-olds. So when we talk about the game, I always have to remind myself of that. You know, I say, oh, did you know, I saw this one play, you did this, one play, you did that. I have to kind of go, yeah, you know what, she's only 10, and she's playing against competition that's higher than she is. It's more experience than she is. So the standard when we talk about her game at the end of the game is always kind of thrown in with that caveat. Same thing here with Carson Wentz. And Dak Prescott is getting the same kind of deal. All rookie quarterbacks get this. Because the expectation isn't that you're going to go 12-4. The expectation isn't that you're going to go 10-6. The expectation is, all right, how do you look? What did you see? How did you manage your mistakes? Did you make any mistakes that could be correctable? Do you not have the ability to read this? Do you see how he reads that? So Carson Wentz, when I watch him, I'm like, wow, he kind of gets it. Wow, that's impressive. That's a smart throw. That's a nice play. That's a good read on his receiver. Jay Cutler, I'm not giving him that. He's been in the league forever. He's been in the league since 2006. So if Jay Cutler makes a mistake or a bad throw, I'm not giving him the same kind of benefit of the doubt. So I look at the quarterbacks, those two quarterbacks, as in two different, you know, lenses. But nevertheless, think about how cities now, like Dallas, like Philadelphia, are genuinely excited about what their future is bringing to them. And this kind of goes against my notion that if you have a guy that he may not be the best quarterback in the league, but he's good enough, lock him into a long-term deal. Yes, don't gamble. But at the same time, there's a really interesting dynamic that's going on with these young quarterbacks where the fan bases of those teams really feel like, wow, we've landed it. We've got it. Think about the Indianapolis Colts. They're 0-2. They're terrible. They have no offensive line. Andrew Luck is getting killed. They have nothing defensively. He has hardly any good weapons around him. Yet you go to Indianapolis, walk around, talk to people. Franchise is in good hands. Because the one position that is hard to fill, the one position that you absolutely have to have, but is not always easy to get, is that quarterback. Oh, sure, bring in a free agent guy on the offensive line. Let's change defensive coordinators and bring in different people for different schemes. But ask the Cleveland Browns, who have had pieces, Pro Bowl pieces, around that position that has not been solidified, that has not been taken care of, that is going to start, what, their 29th quarterback since they came back into the league? In Cody Kessler? Ask that franchise, what's it like to root for a team that doesn't have that position filled? Oh, give me all the Pro Bowl offensive linemen you want. Give me an exciting wide receiver or a running back or a Pro Bowl safety or a linebacker. Sure, all right, fine. But if I don't get that slot done, if I don't get that slot where I wake up every day going, man, everything else around me can collapse. Everything around me, around that player can be fixed, but if I don't have that solidified, I can't be on board with any success. The Eagles may not have success. They're 2-0 right now. The Giants are 2-0. The Redskins are in trouble. Dallas has got some confidence coming off that win against the Redskins. I don't know where the Eagles are going to go. If you're a betting man, it's likely that they'll have a losing record starting a quarterback all 16 games if he makes it. But make no mistake, there's a fun feeling in Philadelphia. And in Chicago last night, there is the same old, same old. We're going to talk about that coming up. Is it time, now that it's financially viable, for the Bears to separate from Jay Cutler? And I'll give you my experiences covering him when he arrived in Denver. That's coming up next, 800-777-2907. I am Tony D. It's SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation Radio,
the next generation of sports radio.
SB Nation is powered by Rocket Mortgage Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans is changing the way you get your mortgage by making it fast, powerful, and completely online.
Hey, this is Drew Brees, and you're listening to SB Nation Radio.
This is Night Moves with Lewis Woodard.
There were six scouts in the Browns front office that thought that Carson Wentz was a winner and that they should draft them with the second pick. All six of them got fired. If you have an organization where you have to be a yes man and you have to support the new chief strategy officer and you have to support the coach in their evaluations, that's not a good sign.
Lewis takes you through your overnights every weeknight on SB Nation Radio. This is Night Moves with Lewis Woodard.
Drake catches a lot of heat from sports fans, and I have to give Drake credit for something. I mean, this isn't exactly sports related. In fact, it's not sports related at all. But he was in a music video with Future. The track was called "Where You At." In the song, he says that he's going to buy his neighbor's house if they complain about too many noise violations. He's done just that. He has bought his neighbor's house because they complained about the noise. You want to talk about pointing to the bleachers and then hitting one over the fence right there. Imagine having that much money that you have beef with your neighbors, and you're like, you know what? I can pay for you to not be my neighbor. I wonder, does that then spill over? Like, if you buy the next door neighbor's house, do you have parties at both houses and the neighbor on that side starts to get mad at you? Like, Drake, did you just establish a continuum where it can't end?
Lewis takes you through your overnights every weeknight on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, Ben Kirchival will join us. We'll talk college football with him coming up at the bottom of the hour. The big wins for Ohio State, for Alabama, and of course Louisville. I got to ask him if he thinks Tennessee is any good, because the Vols are ranked in the top 15, but they've had two unimpressive victories against Ohio and Appalachian State. Good win against Virginia Tech in Bristol, but the verdict still isn't really out on Tennessee if they're good or not. All right, the New England Patriots will take on the Houston Texans on Thursday night, and Jacoby Brissett likely to be the starting quarterback, but Bill Belichick is kind of doing that thing again where, I don't know, we'll see, with Jimmy Garoppolo, who is apparently a sprained AC joint in his right shoulder after getting hit by Kiko Alonso in that game on Sunday. So he's not been ruled out for the game on Thursday, but you know how Bill Belichick works these things. It's like, I don't know, I mean, he could play. I mean, Thursday's not that far away. I mean, we still got time. That's got to keep Houston in check. You know, okay, now we got to spend time in the film room to prepare for that possibility. So Thursday night, Jacoby Brissett could be the second non-Tom Brady starter in a nationally televised game for the Patriots. So I kind of came up with this, and I'm not really sure if this is a conspiracy or is it just a weird thought. When the NFL suspended Tom Brady before, you know, going into last season, and Brady fought it and got to play for the whole year, then we went into this summer and the NFL's like, no, we're going to fight right back, and they took this thing to court and it was kind of a mess. Did the NFL in April, when they put the schedule out, did they think that Tom Brady was going to win his appeals? because the New England Patriots have been on Sunday Night Football against Arizona and now Thursday night against the Houston Texans. And the NFL either, A, thought Tom Brady was going to be the drawing card for both of these matchups. I mean, look, Tom Brady going up against the Arizona Cardinals and Tom Brady going up against J.J. Watt and the Texans defense. They probably thought in April, oh, well, we're probably going down this legal rabbit hole. So let's give the national audience what they want. They always like the Patriots. They either like rooting for them or against them. They seem to be a good national draw. They're one of the top teams in the league. Let's give them that against two pretty good teams in the league to start out the season. Or they knew they were going to win in April when they made the schedule and said, you know what? We're going to showcase the Patriots anyway and remind people that we suspended Tom Brady for four games. We can't put the Patriots on national television all four games that he's out, but we certainly can put them on 50% of the time. I don't know. It's just a thought I've got on how the NFL works here. Because the Thursday night game against Houston seems to be a nice draw, but I got to be honest with you, Jacoby Brissett, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing the kid's name right. I know, I think he went to North Carolina State. That's all I know about him. But that doesn't seem to be a draw enough on a Thursday night. NFL ratings are down. And the consensus has been, like, you read these articles now where they say, oh, NFL ratings are down. Is it politicized? Is it the election? I don't know. I kind of think it's the election. Every 4 years, even non-sports fans, even sports fans go into this going, ah, who's going to be the next president? I might as well start paying attention to this thing. It is the president of the United States. And in this particular one, it's just like sports. Whether the two candidates are going at each other on Twitter, going at each other on TV, going at each other in interviews, it's just like any two college programs throwing trash talk at each other. It's got that sports vibe. So I think that's probably one of the reasons. But nevertheless, we've had Jimmy Garoppolo, who we did not know at the start of the season, going up against an Arizona defense. And now we've got Jacoby Brissett, who we do not know, going up against a Houston defense. And these are the two nationally televised games. The NFL either knew they were going to lose and have Brady's start, or they want to remind us who's boss. All right, Jay Cutler last night, he injured his thumb again. It's the same injury I think he had in 2011. He's going to be out. They lost again. The offense didn't look very good. And I think this is time now that we put a bow on the Jay Cutler Chicago Bear experiment. He can walk away at the end of this year. When he signed his extension, it was like 3 years that were locked in, and then everything else was an option. It's now heading into the option. I think the Bears can let this guy go, and it doesn't cost him anything. At what point does Chicago say, look, we've done it. We've tried. He went to Chicago. Let's not forget this. He went to Chicago because offensive guru, boy genius, Josh McDaniels did not want him with the Broncos when he got the head coaching job. And Jay Cutler didn't want to be around for somebody that was trying to actively trade him. So the two decided to split. Now, I was in Denver in 2006 when Mike Shanahan drafted Jay Cutler. And he drafted him out of Vanderbilt. And before people look at Jay Cutler's Vanderbilt record and say, well, he never won anything. He never led Vanderbilt to a bowl game. And he never got the Commodores a winning record. He certainly got them a lot better than what they used to be. And they were in competitive games in Vanderbilt. Yes, no bowl game. Yes, no winning record. But my God, Vanderbilt was a dumpster trash fire. And he at least gave them some respectability. Put them in games they shouldn't have been in. And he did it with his arm talent. From Santa Claus, Indiana. Mike Shanahan fell in love with that. He was looking for the next franchise quarterback. They kind of wanted to move on from Jake Plummer. And he came to Denver. And everybody was waiting for this marriage to work. But one of the things that you knew about Jay Cutler was he kind of had a solemn kind of feel to him. Now, I remember one story in which Brandon Marshall was having some trouble, wide receiver Brandon Marshall, was having trouble with Mike Shanahan. And Jay Cutler actually publicly called out his really good friend in the press. We had really not seen that from him. But I remember he was saying, it's always this, it's always that. At one point, you got to take responsibility, man, because Brandon Marshall was telling stories about sliding into a TV and cutting up his arm and whatnot. And Cutler did come out and say, look, I'm going to call you out here. They were really close. They were good friends. I'm going to call you out. Trying to establish that leadership role. But the Broncos, again, were that team that would play really well, then kind of disappear, and then finish 8-8, not make the playoffs. And by the end of the 2008 season that started so well for Denver, their offense was on fire, and then it kind of died out. Mike Shanahan got fired. Lovie Smith got let go. Mark Trestman got let go. Adam Gase came and left. Coaches come in and out. And every single time, the pro Jay Cutler people say all the same things. Well, he doesn't have this. He doesn't have this. He doesn't have this. He doesn't have this. And this line stinks. And he doesn't have a running game. And at what point do you say he's our quarterback and he's got to overcome this? At what point do you have to say, you know what? Every year we can't get you a perfect team. You're going to have teams that are not going to be perfect on the defensive side of the ball. There's going to be someone wrong on the offensive line. You know what? You're not going to have Pro Bowl wide receivers at both ends when you look. And sometimes our running game isn't going to be very good. And there's going to be injuries on the offensive line. For the love of God, can you at least try to win some games without having a perfect team around you? Because that's been the MO of this guy ever since he started. Oh, you just got to add this to this. You just got to get this better. We just got to add this receiver. We just got to bring in this coach. Oh, this guy will work. He's really good with quarterbacks. Oh, this guy will work. And it never works. He's a mediocre quarterback in a mediocre team. He's about 500 for his career. He's had plenty of games where you go, wow, and there's plenty of games where you go, And counter that with the excitement, as I brought up earlier, in Philadelphia where they're young kid, they feel like they've got the guy. And here's the other thing. In Indianapolis that I mentioned earlier, Andrew Luck doesn't have anything around him, but at least Colts fans go, yeah, but we're not going to get rid of Andrew Luck. Go fix around Andrew Luck. Maybe in Chicago the problem is this guy is just, eh. He's not enough to get you riled up angry, and he's not good enough to get you sky-high crazy. And it's time to just move on. I know you need to lock up a guy, and they did lock him up. But at the same time, the evidence is right there. There's no enthusiasm. There's no feeling like it's in control. There's no feeling like the team is in good hands. It's time for the Bears to walk away. All right, coming up, Ben Kirchival will join us. We'll talk college football. That's next. I am Tony D. Hit me up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, fun times college football on Saturday. Some very, very big moment wins for programs. Ben Kirchival joins us here on SB Nation Radio to go over that and a couple of games coming up this week. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. All right, so Louisville, I don't think anybody really saw this coming, but these are those kind of moments where we say, all right, this now means something. What does it mean for Florida State, and what does it mean for Louisville, that kind of outcome?
Well, for Florida State, it means there are some serious problems that have to be addressed, and I think you can even go back to week one against Ole Miss when it was pretty clear that this team had a lot to work on. Offensively, the protection issues are still there, and that some of that dates back to last year. Offensive line, there were some problems. Dalvin Cook did not have a good game in pass protection, and he hasn't really been able to get off to the kind of start that people thought that he would. DeAndre Francois is a kid with a high ceiling, but right now he's still showing some first year starter struggles. I think defensively, it was probably the most surprising part. Guys just missing coverages. I mean, that stuff, even if you had Derwin James in the lineup, I think those problems would still persist. So I just think you look at Florida State right now and go, well, they're a very talented team, but they really did get they got handled. And that's not something that you would necessarily expect. So I think that this can still be a good team, but maybe a longer road back to national relevance for them. And then as for Louisville, you got the best player on the field, Lamar Jackson, that's going to give you a chance to win every single time. And he was still able to break loose and get four of his five touchdowns were rushing. So he's still a rushing threat. Even when you try to contain him, his athleticism is just able to win one-on-one. So still some room to grow as a passer. You know, he missed some passes early in the game that I think he wished he probably would have had back, but still just a dynamic player, and this is just a supremely well-coached football team by Bobby Petrino. And again, helps when you've got a great player like Jackson, but they put him in positions to succeed. And right now you're looking at Bobby Petrino's team and saying he's doing as good a job as any coach in college football.
Ben Kercheval, CBS Sports, joins us, talk some college football. All right, Ben, I had this thought last week because I looked at the schedule and I said, ooh, here's Oklahoma hosting Ohio State after coming off a loss to Houston to start the season. Boy, they could be done out of this playoff picture in by week three, and here's Alabama going to play Ole Miss, and the Rebels could be done in the playoff picture. I like the way the committee is saying, hey, go get some opponents. Go get some out-of-conference games that matter. But I'm wondering, if you're these programs and you're now out of it after week three because you did go out and get these big games, will we see schools go, yeah, but I may ease up a little bit on that in the future?
Well, I think the whole scheduling, after 2 years of the playoff, to me, the go out and schedule tough thing, to me, has been probably one of the biggest false narratives in college football. I don't think you necessarily have to schedule tough in order to be one of the four teams in that playoff. So now, as for teams like Ole Miss, teams like Oklahoma, look, I don't think they anticipated Houston being as good as they were whenever that game was scheduled. So part of it is you're always rolling the dice a little bit on some of these teams whenever you go out and schedule them like that years in advance. That being said, if we're looking across the landscape right now after 3 weeks and eliminating teams from the playoff contention, then we've learned absolutely nothing from the past 2 years. I don't think that you can make those kind of statements 3 weeks into the season. We haven't even hit October yet, haven't hit conference play yet. There's still the possibility that a two-loss team can get into the playoff. We haven't had that precedent set yet, but that doesn't mean that it can't happen. In fact, I would probably venture to guess that a two-loss team gets in before a non-conference champion gets in, because that's still something that the committee takes into consideration. So is Oklahoma a desperate team that probably has to win out? Yeah. The same could be said for Ole Miss, but I don't necessarily write them off just because they went out and played tough games and didn't come out on the right end. That being said, if you look at Oklahoma, they got handled in both of those games, and I think that should be taken into consideration as well.
Was it the surprising how Ohio State did go there and pretty much dominate this game, or was there something about Oklahoma that was just missing that allowed this to occur?
I'm probably more pleasantly surprised by Ohio State. This is other than JT Barrett and a few other guys, this is a fairly young and otherwise or inexperienced team. And to go on the road and have a lot of those first-year starters go out and play really well, that's a little bit surprising to me. Now, Ohio State's recruited as well as anybody in college football over the last 4 years, 5 years. So it's not surprising that they have athletes out on the field who can go out there, have great speed, have great athleticism, go out there and make plays. To do it in the first road test of the year, to go out and just play physically and sound football, not really going out there making mistakes, just really surprised by that. Did not think this team would gel as early as they have. I think that was probably my biggest concern about the Buckeyes going into the season, was knew the talent was there. What's the chemistry like for this team when you're breaking in a whole bunch of newer starters? And so far, they've really answered the call. And so when you have Oklahoma's backup quarterback saying, well, they run a really basic defense, well, technically, he's not wrong. I mean, when you have newer guys in there, it's not always going to be an advanced defense. It's not going to have necessarily a ton of blitz packages. If you have guys who can just go out there and do their job in a basic 4-3, you don't always need to have an exotic defense. And they just go out there and they run it really well.
I know the polls now are more of a talking point than they are a barometer of where we're going to be heading and used for that purpose. But a lot of people were high on Tennessee. And yeah, they had that battle of Bristol and they beat Virginia Tech. But they've had two rather uninspiring victories against Appalachian State and Ohio. Is Tennessee a good team?
They're a talented team. They're not a particularly well-coached or fundamentally sound team. They fumbled the ball 11 times this year and they've recovered all but one. That's nothing but pure luck. And a couple of those recoveries have been for a touchdown. That's even luckier. There's a good chance that Tennessee could probably be 1-2 or 2-1 or something like that. But, you know, here they are at 3-0. They're a little bit banged up going into that Florida game, 4-2. But they enter a really tough stretch. They get Florida, Georgia. I think then they get Texas A&M and Alabama. They get those games in consecutive weeks. And to me, that's when we're really going to find out what this Volunteers team is made out of. I still have questions about Butch Jones and his ability to coach this team. Offensively, they've been very disappointing. So I think some of that fumble luck is going to run out for them unless they do a better job of holding on to the football. They're going to go up against some pretty good defenses here. So I see Tennessee getting into a lot of lower scoring games, and I'm not sure that they're always going to end up on the right side of them. So talent-wise, there's no debating how good Tennessee is. This just isn't a team that has played particularly well, especially up front. And I tend to think their time's coming.
Ben Kirchival, CBS Sports, joins us to talk some college football. Appreciate your time as always, Ben. We'll catch up with you soon.
All right, thanks.
You got it. It was interesting what he said there about the two losses. Look, I understand the new kind of way we have to look things now at college football. There's a committee. They will view things the way they view things. Traditionally, when we see teams with two losses at this time, we do throw them out of the equation because that formula just wouldn't add up. A lot of chaos would have to ensue. LSU did benefit from this years ago. It was about 10 years ago. They won a national championship with two losses. To me, I still am going to have that mindset that if you're Ole Miss, you don't necessarily need the SEC to fall apart around you. You really need a lot of college football to fall apart around you. Oh, Oklahoma, the same thing. If Oklahoma, after a loss to Ohio State and a loss to Houston, these are two of the top teams right now in the country, are left standing after two losses as one of the top four teams in college football, then if I went into sleep today and woke up with that a reality, I would absolutely want to look to see how the heck that happened. Tell me, how did everybody fall apart that allowed that to occur? I don't think in Oklahoma they're thinking college football playoff. They certainly can win the Big 12 because they're going to have conference play rolling around. Maybe that'll kick in for them. I don't know. But if you're Ole Miss and you're Oklahoma and it's week three and you've already got two losses and you do run the table, those better be A, impressive, and boy, oh boy, oh boy, there has to be a ton of chaos in college football for me to consider you. Yeah, you're right. It's not necessarily over, but boy, I'm not betting on it. All right, coming up, Roger Goodell wants one thing. You can tell one thing. That's next on SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation Radio.
Get all your college football coverage right here on SB Nation Radio.
Quick is the lone receiver out to left this time. Two tight ends. Here's the give. Smith plows ahead. Close. Is he in? No sign yet. Yes, touchdown, Jeremy Smith.
You can always find us on the go on SBNationRadio.com. This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, so Roger Goodell had made a statement Monday night at the brand new, brand spanking new, I should say, nice, clean, new stadium in Minnesota, that the Oakland Raiders moving to Las Vegas is not a done deal yet, saying that he never wants to see a city lose a team twice. Unless, of course, it's St. Louis, then screw you. But he'd like to see the people of Oakland work this out. Despite the fact that the people of Las Vegas were like, hey, oh, damn, yeah. Actually, I should retract that. A committee in Las Vegas said, oh, no, $750 million. We'll use this to build a new stadium. Now, people in Oakland are like, no. The government's like, no, we're not doing no public money. We have too many needs. We're not building you a stadium. That's it. I want to know why this is a concern for Roger Goodell. Why does he want a team in Oakland if that city does not want to build them a new stadium? Doesn't this go against the complete NFL way? I mean, my God, publicly fund your stadium. That's the way it works. Then make sure you threaten to leave in order to get it. Now here are the Raiders actually got a position where they can go get a new place. They can get a really nice stadium. And Roger Goodell's like, I don't know. I didn't hear any of this when the St. Louis Rams were talking about going back to L.A. Did I miss it? Did I miss where Roger Goodell was like, no, you ain't going to do that. Hold on, wait a minute. Just calm down, everybody. They're not going to Los Angeles. No, I kind of remember the NFL was like, come on in. oh my God, Stan Kroenke's going to build this brand new $3 billion stadium that will house two teams? Why, of course. People in St. Louis, I don't care what measure you put on the ballot. We got to go. And in Oakland, it's like, no, I'm not sure. Does Roger Goodell not want a team in Las Vegas? Because if he doesn't want a team in Las Vegas, he's got to make sure he gets all the other owners on board. Now, the Raiders need like 22 owners to vote for their permission to move. So if Mark Davis says, hey, look, we've got the stadium funded. That's, you know, it's going to be built. We're really excited. We want to move. The owners around the league, this is where it gets really tricky, because the owners always have to kind of look at these kind of votes as, well, one day I may. And what that means is, if Mark Davis and the Raiders go, I want to move. And let's say Jerry Jones is like, I don't want you to move to Las Vegas. I don't want one of our franchises in Las Vegas. Well, Jones may want something else, not to move the Cowboys or anything, but Jones may want something else that that needs ownership vote, and he doesn't want to be the guy that goes against that trend. So if the Raiders want to move to Las Vegas, you got to talk about all these other owners that one day may be in a position to need everybody else for something, whether it's to move or whether it's to do something different or whatnot, and you want the owners on your side. The Raiders, I can't imagine the Raiders, just under the business climate of the NFL, I can't imagine them staying in Oakland. If there is a city in America that is willing to do exactly what they've been told to do. They were told $750 million for a stadium, or we'll walk out of this project. And the committee in Las Vegas said, well, we got it for you. No problem. We got a hotel tax. We'll break this down. We'll do it this way. You know, the committee didn't say, well, the best we can do is $300 million. Can you help us out? No. This group said $750 million has to come from the public. The committee said it will come from the public. There's a stadium plan for you. All you need to do is have the Raiders say, we're coming, and the vote come from the NFL, and it'll be done. Why Goodell is doing this? I think Goodell is a little nervous about the PR. You know, the Rams just moved. Everyone in LA is excited, except for those who have to pay like $140 for park. There's a feeling like we really got excitement over here, but we've let down a city there. The NFL's done this before. Baltimore moved in the middle of the night. Cleveland lost its beloved Browns to Baltimore. They had to put together a brand new franchise, expansion franchise, just to calm that thing down. There's been teams that moved before. I remember when I covered the Patriots, there was a talk about them going to St. Louis before they got bought and stayed in Foxborough. There was a talk about them moving to Hartford. Right? Teams have gone through this. A lot of teams have gone through this act. We need something. We're not really sure. It was James Orthwine that owned the Patriots that was trying to move them to St. Louis, was trying to fill that void before the Rams moved there. And those are hurdles you got to go through. But I don't know why Roger Goodell's so vocal. I think he looked at Minnesota and said, I really wish it could happen like this. Look at this stadium. Look how much public funding we got for this bad boy. We're going to give him a Super Bowl, but look at this. By the way, the LA Coliseum thing, our good friend Frank Schwab wrote a really interesting piece saying, the L.A. Coliseum was kind of a disaster for fans at that game, that home opener. They ran out of water. They ran out of water at the concession stand. It was over 90 degrees. They had 91,000 people there. They ran out of water. People were charging $140 to park your car. I've said this forever. The parking situation alone is enough to get people to stay home. Look at what you get sitting on your couch with the National Football League. Look, we kind of had fun with Adam last week. He puts together 5 televisions. He's got the package. He can watch all these games sitting in the comfort of his house on HD screens. He gets to see replay, analysis, all of that. He doesn't have to pay $70 to park his car. He doesn't have to pay over $100 for the tickets, over $100 for the food. $140 to park your car? I mean, look, I go to amusement parks and they go $25. $25 for what? Park your car. Well, didn't you want me to come here in the first place? Park my car? I mean, what was I supposed to do? Walk here? I'm already going to pay for the ticket to the park with a family of 4. They're screaming to ride some magical coaster. I got to pay $25 just to leave my car in your lot? Yeah, you do. To go to a football game, it's like $50. Want to park close? It's like $100. And people will pay. I know there are people with means to pay. But when you look at all of that stuff up, it's amazing anybody goes to games at all. No, thanks. I can stay home. I got a 70-inch screen TV. I got surround sound. I can watch multiple games, keep up with my fantasy team. I got Wi-Fi in my house. It's amazing people go. $140 to park. No water. At the L.A. Coliseum that's been around 100 years, they couldn't store enough water. Like, it's the first event it ever had. All right, coming up in the next hour, more NFL. It's Tony D on SB Nation Radio.